And let's do this. Oh, right on time.
Sorry, came from one meeting to the next. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Okay. Oh, I thought you said Craig.
Hi, Greg.
I thought you said Greg.
Greg. So here's a fun thing, Craig. Your name is Craig Kelly.
Correct.
You commented on the wire, Chris Wire, and C. Kelly, right?
That's how they...
Yes. Yeah. So there used to be a Chris Kelly who worked in the county executive's office. And so, you know, we pay attention to the news. And so for a very long time, you were the other C. Kelly.
Okay.
So we kept joking that Chris you commented... And he was like away, like in California.
Okay.
And we were like, well, he's definitely not on the wire while I'm in California.
Also, on the way down here, a kid on the bus, and I thank you for that.
You are welcome.
Because there was
they will be more obvious.
Did you get an agenda? I'll grab it for you.
Stuff to the first aid kit right behind the door.
Yeah, I'm like, they're all in the same spot. The bus is going to be
at. I'll get it for you.
Once they have the tips, it'll be a lot more clear where it is.
Okay, sure. Thank you for your help.
You are more than welcome. Hello, Barbara.
I just came from helping somebody having trouble with their landlord.
We have a sign in here. Oh, you heard me.
And you were instead of trying to evict them the legal way, they're harassing
me. I do talk very fast. You need a personal assistant just for me.
Were you here as well?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
If you can remember...
But a list of organizations specific to which things, though. I remember.
To help with full ID.
I'm going to send you to constituent services people.
Okay,
thank you. Okay, we're going to get started again. We actually...
Thank you. That was very kind of you.
Thank you.
I keep us out of trouble. All right.
I don't know whether...
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I need a gavel.
Thank you very much.
Is there an agenda?
There's an agenda at the end.
Do you want to grab it for you?
We'll start once more, get your agenda, and get seated. That's okay.
Oh, sure.
Love sugar, Laura. So she's gonna be extra spicy. Sorry, I totally stepped
in
your foot.
Okay, so I'm gonna call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. It's easy to count because there's only three of us and two of us are here. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the May 2nd meeting? I guess I'll second it. I don't know.
So we're not expecting Craig.
He hasn't come.
He hasn't come to the first one either.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
Hopefully he can make the future.
It'd be good if you reached out to him. I kind of had to twist his arm a little bit to get involved because I really wanted to have a Republican on here. So if it's not something that he can do, or if he wants to, if he's comfortable with it, I'd probably run it by Kevin as well. Like,
okay.
We could put another appointment on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So I'd ask for a few things just to kind of have a regular update so that we know where we stand in housing. I know that the executive team probably knows this by heart, but for those of us in the legislature, I want to make sure that we know the numbers too and keep track of the numbers. So the one sheet that we got was the, and I'll try to speak up for you, Barbara. I'll try to speak up, make sure that I speak loud enough.
We got a battery in there really quickly.
Okay. So the one thing I asked for was homeless cases by month. So we have that up to May, and I want to keep tracking that every month as we go through. You know, nothing surprising. It looks like basically looked like the last few months, roughly comparable, not a lot of change. The point for me to do this is to just keep reminding us how critical this issue is and how many people are homeless every single day, every single month. So this keeps the numbers up in front of us. I did also ask for the total expenditures for the last month. That's not easy to get because billing takes longer, invoices take longer. We'll track that some other way. I want to also make sure that we keep track at the county level how much we spend at the legislative level. I'm sure that the executive team knows, but my recollection is we spent $10 million on emergency housing last year, all of last year. That's a lot of money. So we need to figure out how to get people into other housing. Any questions on the updates or any questions about that? Okay. Supportive housing updates. I also asked for a list of the housing developments that are current and that are in progress. That's the list here. So we have, according to this, 2,962 units of housing. Some of these look like they have maybe exited. I'm not sure if they still have or not. If you look at the exit years, there are some that are before 2024 and some in 2024. So do we know if those are still affordable or have they gone into being market rate? Do we know?
I can assure most of those have not gone into being market rate. They're eligible.
Okay.
But they're probably moving into re-upping in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, that's great.
It's just to be aware of the fact that these things do have exit dates associated with them.
Right. I know Woodstock Meadows went market rate, I think, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. 3 years ago. Yeah. Okay, and then the next page is the developments in progress and process. And it looks like we have 582 units that are in process of being developed. Yes, go ahead, Kai.
I brought an updated list.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so there's copies over there.
Is that what I was just handed?
I'm not sure.
I think so. I grabbed one from everyone that was over there.
So we updated it to include affordable, mm-hmm. like subsidized, but also market rate
okay.
projects that are coming in. And if there's a, yeah, that one. If
can
there
grab you one?
Is
I don't have
a inclusionary zoning requirement, so what percentage of units are going to be affordable? So
okay.
supportive housing, fully affordable housing, and then market rate housing is the percentage. So it's going to be affordable.
That's great.
That's so it expands.
Yeah.
Does anyone else need one? There's only one, so I want to be cognizant of not taking. Did you need one, Secretary?
It's okay. You can have it.
This answers a question I had. Was iPark 87? I was wondering if that was going to be. So that's great. So it's 880 units total. And what's the percentage affordable? Do we know yet?
None.
Okay.
For iPark, the county planning board made a recommendation that a minimum of 10% should be affordable, and the town has refused to essentially include any affordable housing or inclusionary zoning in its zoning statute.
Okay, Laura.
Was that conversation with the previous administration or the one that will be ignored?
Conversation with the town board as a whole, and it was a formal recommendation that was replied back to the planning, back to the town board in their approval of the site plan, and they overruled it.
By
we also tried to engage them with the Housing for Our Communities initiative, and they said no.
And we also had a conversation with a developer, and he said no.
Okay.
Cool.
So we've talked about everybody we can talk to.
That was me being curious if there was
okay.
a certain person who was more amenable to these things than others as far as.
Oh, well.
Could we invite them to come and make accounting?
It's a town, it's a municipality thing. It's not really up to us.
We can't,
You know, I think we did what we can do. We made the recommendation at the county level and they overruled it with a supermajority vote, right?
They did.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I'm confused about why, like the what populated this list? Because it says affordable housing developments at the top, but then we have affordable units zero for some of them. So why are they on this list?
I was just making these updates. This is a combined list of affordable units and also market.
Okay, so this is all developments that are in process in the county?
Probably not all, but
we capture them on something called a major project list that are under review from the county planning department, the county planning board.
Got it.
And this goes back to 2019 and it's completed to January. And then Kai has added some of the stuff that's come in since January.
Awesome, that's really, really cool.
So that what this doesn't capture though is single family development.
Right.
And we made an attempt a couple years back to try to ask for building permit data at the local level of pipeline projects and kind of like mm-hmm. mixed response. So
I think it's important. One of the reasons we wanted to give this to the community is I think it's important to recognize the fact that the private sector is beginning to respond to the lack of housing. And we're seeing more and more multifamily development projects come in. Not that they're affordable, but we're actually seeing them come in. We've just finished close to over 200 units in the last couple of months come online.
Do we have a list of the municipalities that require affordable?
We can get you that.
Okay.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. That's fairly simple to put through in terms of inclusionary zoning. And most of them are 10%,
okay.
Although some of them have the ability to waive it at the planning board level, so it's not a, quote, solid requirement. They can be waived.
For the developer that said no to affordable housing, do you know if they're getting tax breaks?
They, not at this particular point in time, we're in the site plan review work and special permit work and subdivision work, so the short answer is no. And they wouldn't be eligible for that absent the affordability issue.
Thank you.
Laura?
Does this include the changes happening at like Kingston Housing Authority for Rondo?
No, because they're not new units.
But they're expanding to add units.
Right.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
So like things like that, do those get captured somewhere?
Kingston Housing Authority?
So like Rondo Gardens is demolishing two buildings, but they're also building two larger ones, is my understanding, too. They're going to go from 3 floors to 4 floors, and there'll be an increase in the number. But they're also changing it from being Section 8 and the way that it's subsidized, so, I think, to like Section 9. Yeah. But they're incorporating some fair market, I thought. It's a weirdly in flux. That's why I'm just curious.
So the answer would still be no. It wouldn't capture those. All those minor nuances don't get captured in some of these data. This data, okay. It's more of a think of this as a concept level look at the developments. There are other small developments out there that we may or may not know about as well that are not referral to the board.
Okay.
But if KHA ends up adding like 25 units, I will happily make sure to let.
We can put it on the list.
Yeah.
And we know that there's developers now, for example, in Shangun, we know that there's developers that are picking up projects that were dropped, and they're picking them up and starting to move them forward as well.
Okay. Any other questions on, Barbara, do you have a question?
So this would include, I think today maybe there'll be more talk about supportive housing. Did I get that? I listened to the tape, but anyhow. So, I just spoke to Stephanie Turco at Gateway. They are actually one of the largest housing providers in the county, and she was saying all these levels of housing and this many units are coming on. They're talking to the sixth floor, blah, blah, blah. She has developers. It was like, wow, you know? But those are the kinds of things that aren't quite. They're probably just in discussion, some of them, and then there's ESHI grants, and what is that access? Those are a lot of questions, but they may be related.
Yeah, I think what we didn't get to put together, we've got affordable units, and we've got a couple temporary or permanent supportive housing projects in the pipeline. I think what we did not fully capture is all the supportive units, but ongoing list, and we got this request.
It was late. Yeah, it was about just a week ago.
Yeah.
So we'll.
But it's also people understanding, because even though I have made myself try to remember what all these things are, it's almost like a little glossary sometimes
of all the different types of supportive housing.
And then also, I guess any of these, you know, like Family Woodstock is 51% partner in the one at Golden Hill, right?
That's correct.
So it's like, how do you, maybe, I don't know if it's helpful or not, to know what organizations are actively involved in development or have a big interest in, if that makes sense, in developing more housing.
I think where we are from the committee's perspective, I think where we are is trying to give you an overview without sort of inundating you with data that really or may not be germane to what you're trying to accomplish. as you find out more and more and look at recommendations, we can get deeper and deeper into the dive here. There are a couple of givens that we know. For example, ESHI units are fairly easy to come by at the state level, but they're impossible to build without subsidy. What ESHI does is basically give you subsidy for the supportive services to the tune of about $25,000 a year for those supportive services. Problem is there's no capital to build a unit. So you can go get the unit, but you get the ESHI grant, but you don't have the unit to essentially provide those supportive services. The example we would have is that there are, I believe, 40 ESHI units associated with the Golden Hill Project. There's support, frail elderly supportive in the Golden Hill Project. And so out of 80 units of elderly, 40 of them are ESHI units that are supporting frail elderly. And we can go through all of that work. And then once you start looking at a real deep dive in supportive units or supportive housing, there is something within the continuum of care which monitors supportive housing units fairly significantly in terms of how they're used, what the subsidies are, et cetera, et cetera. So those are available to us as well, and that's something called an HMIS system, Housing Management Information System, that's available to you as well. I think when we talk to anyone that's involved in the supportive housing field, they will basically tell you that there's not enough, A, and B is that the county has consistently relied on others to provide it, and they're running out of the ability to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the last meeting we talked about needing, how many units was it, the supportive housing, roughly?
Oh, you and I had a game at that point.
Yeah.
It was.
We started at 500 and we doubled it to 1,000.
That's what I thought it was, yeah. Okay. So that's the target someday. Okay, any other questions on where we stand as far as what's there, what's coming soon, what isn't coming? Okay. The other thing that I want to talk about related to this, and we mentioned a little bit, is which towns have current laws requiring affordability for certain situations, which towns are developing those particular laws. There's another sheet here, which is the zoning updated sheet. I do know that the town of Woodstock information is a little bit out of date. They have had their public hearing. I think they're going to make a few tweaks to the code from the last time I saw it to get through and get that hopefully passed sometime this year. I don't know a lot about the other towns. Does anybody else know the status of the other towns that wants to report on them other than what's on the sheet here? Barbara?
I'm on the Kingston Housing Task Force. I'm a part of the Ulster County Housing Smart Communities. We're doing pretty well. We were able to check a lot of the boxes in the initiative because of doing a very comprehensive update of our zoning process. Right. So we were lucky to have a consultant team working with us for quite a long period of time and a lot of community input, and it's made all the difference. I think in Kingston it means there's not a lot of land to develop, so it's like the rezoning enabled us to think about how we creatively create more density and build up.
Yeah, and I noticed that there's three affordable rental units on our list, three sets of them, right, from Kingston. Is that part of the new zoning code? Is that a result of that?
For the ones in the pipeline?
Yeah.
Baxter Project, that's a result of the inclusionary zoning. The three at the bottom are actually a result of the Kingston ARPA Affordable Housing Fund.
Okay.
They put $1 million towards units, and they got applications. And so these are all, some of them are mixed use. Mixed income. Some affordable, some not affordable. But, and Barrel Factory would be the other one.
Right. Okay. Go ahead.
I put together the zoning updates. So these are zoning updates that have happened, are talking about happening, or are in the process, like Woodstock. Not all of them are necessarily talking about inclusionary zoning.
Okay.
So requirements, but all of them are generally talking about, you know, housing friendly zoning updates or policies in the zoning code that would provide more density, allow for more housing in certain areas. So yeah, just wanted to make that clear.
Laura.
Kai is aware of this. I just wanted to also a note to kind of communicate to legislators who can then communicate back to their towns. There's currently legislation before the Senate Assembly, which is likely to be reintroduced for next year. So just in terms of where energies go and thinking towards the future, and I can send it to the people in this room. But it is Senate Bill S7589. And it authorizes towns to establish their own community housing funds using real estate transfer taxes. So just kind of as an FYI, something that's in the legal universe at the moment. 7589. So that's just these towns that are already forward thinking of that would then, it would behoove them to throw their support behind these when it comes to lobbying at the state level.
Sounds good.
I think for legislators can then also direct energy to encourage state representatives to pass.
Okay, thank you. Legislative actions, Elizabeth Manor status, there's nothing to report right now. Hopefully there'll be something soon. I put on resolution 167, which is a resolution, I believe, sponsored by Abe. Were you the primary sponsor? Yeah. It went through the petition of discharge process. It'll be on this month's session. This will dedicate 25%, I believe, of the increase or of the total?
Of the total, so 50% okay. Of the increase.
Okay. And the occupancy tax to a housing fund and also to a transportation fund and continuing to fund tourism from that same bucket. Hoping we can pass it. I know it did not make it through committee last time, but it'll be at our session on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, for those that are curious, kind of the background on it and the points that I would just emphasize about how important it is, you know, we just closed our first round of applications for the Housing Action Fund, and it's very important that we could obviously add and remove money at any time, but to establish it and to really stick our flag in that mechanism and say this is how we're funding housing and that it's an ongoing continuous mechanism for funding housing is very important to signal to the community of developers that we will rely on to build housing. Like, it is a fact that the private sector is going to build the housing that we need for our community. We can see based on the projects that we're talking about that it is essential that we do whatever we can do to make sure the types of units that we need in this community are being built, and to show our commitment there and to show that, you know, developers that might not have applied this time or might not have, you know, might not get funded this time, that they should come back, that they should apply in the future, that this is a consistent source of funding is really important. So far, we've only funded it from a one-time source, and showing that it's an ongoing funding source is critical in sending that message and showing the larger private sector community that we are a long-term partner in housing and we're committed to tackling this problem. This is not just a flash in the pan and we have a fund balance. This is actually something the county is committed to.
Thank you. Any other questions on that? That's pretty much all I have. We'll have discussion. Anybody have questions or comments or anything else that we should be talking about that I mean, go ahead, Barbara.
I guess it's a Ulster County Housing Smart Communities question, but it relates to the zoning updates. So of these towns, are these all in the initiative?
Yep.
So
some of these, go ahead.
Well, the question is, different towns have different needs in terms of what they need to check off on the 10 actions or whatever categories they are. And do they have the help needed to do it? like some maybe have scrapped together an expert they know that knows zoning in their town, and then people are sitting there with highlighters who are on the town board, you know, like, do you know, or we know, is there a pool of money needed to support?
We have contracts with several of these communities right now that we're funding the consultant work for these communities to do that effort. And there's money in the planning department budget to essentially do additional work as well this go around. So we're waiting to see what applications. I know the city of Kingston has asked us to provide some additional funding for education and outreach. You and I've had that conversation. But there is money. I do my best conversation sometimes at the grocery store. So
it's saved my weekend.
So the short answer is yes. The difficulty is a lot of the towns are going through comprehensive plan updates. A lot of the towns are going through changes in administration. And so there's a learning curve A and a political will B to get this work done, and there's a lot of attention that it takes to essentially run a town, and particularly the smaller towns, and so they're coming in and having a housing discussion, but they're also having discussions about all the changes in the state statutes, trying to make sure that they keep their infrastructure going and stuff like that. So you have that short window and an agenda that you can have these kinds of conversations. And while there's a general sense out there from us that there is a crisis, there's not necessarily a general sense in some of these towns that the crisis applies to that.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have different desires. Okay. And that's why it's taken Woodstock, I think it's about 3 years now, literally.
And some towns are amazingly efficient at going through the approval process. The town of Lloyd has been, they don't have a lot of affordable housing, but they've approved an awful lot of housing in the last 10 years. The village of New Paltz has an amazing set of regulatory structure within its zoning statute to essentially provide for not only affordable housing, but also density bonuses for those housing that are specific to some of the needs within the community, particularly senior housing. So you recall that in those two towns that I just mentioned, one is that we now have a funding round that funded a housing project in New Paltz for seniors. Have a funding round, Silver Gardens, that we participated in as a county that funded a housing project in the town of Lloyd. So those projects have been fairly consistent with respect to the ability. People think of New Paltz as a very difficult to develop area. They've actually shown some amazing willingness to establish multifamily housing and allow it to occur. Even some of their higher end projects, the example I would give you is the net zero building. When you come into town, there's a 10% affordability requirement within that building, and they've adhered to it. And town of Marbletown has moved to essentially amend its zoning statute in a fairly robust way to provide for inclusionary zoning and to move to essentially make sure that ADUs are as of right uses. So we're seeing that. And when you look within zoning statutes, there's a couple things that occur that I think are the most important. One is that we have not diminished the ability of those folks that are essentially neighbors to projects to sue. And they do that often, and they hold up projects often. In some instances, we have not been able to change the culture of the planning boards, and the planning boards hold, in many instances, the future of a lot of these projects in their hands, and they can make things take a really long time or a very short time relative to how those projects proceed forward. And sometimes it's changing that culture that is important as changing the zoning statute. The good news is we have taken an advocacy role as a planning department, which we've never done before, to actually go to zoning hearings, and Kai's been out to essentially argue for approvals. That's a very new position for a planning department. And we do that with some trepidation because we're reviewing these projects on a regulatory side, on the other side of that. But the idea of having someone from the county standing there having a conversation saying you should do this and here's why and here's how we can address some of the concerns is a different discussion than we've ever had before.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of education that's needed too on some of the municipalities and some of the towns, because they hear zoning changes and they hear density changes, and you get people saying it's going to be 10,000 people moving to Woodstock. And I'm using an actual real example. You know, that would never happen. It couldn't happen. But that's the fear that people can hear and people can listen to when they talk about density changes. So,
yeah, to that point too, and to Barbara's point as well, you know, it's like we're playing the long game, because if you go straight to the zoning code update and you try to make big changes without doing the education and getting familiar, including the planning board as well as the general public, it can backfire on you. And so, you know, we're playing the long game, getting everyone educated on what a zoning code update actually means, and then moving into the regulatory changes so that when those do come up, there's, you know, an appetite for it and there's support for it. So, and then the comprehensive plan process, you need your comprehensive plan to be aligned with the zoning code updates that you're going to make, or else you're out of compliance.
Do you know which towns don't have comprehensive plans recent? I know there's
which
a
plans
few.
Plans have updates?
Yeah, they don't have updates recently.
Olive is going through an update. Shandaken is going through an update. Shongum is going through an update.
Town of Saugerties
is going through an update. So these are.
Is Shirley still doing it, or did they?
I don't have it on my. Okay. I don't have it in my head, so I don't know.
Okay.
Whether that's the case or not, but there are significant updates going through. It's, you know, it may or may not be. The example I would give you, in some communities, they're going through a zoning update, but a comprehensive plan update, but the first thing you do is pass a moratorium so you can't build anything.
Right.
so we basically have to come back and say we really hate moratoriums. My board is vehement with respect to moratoriums, and make recommendations that they only apply to certain kinds of things and they exempt certain things such as housing, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
Good.
We talk about affordable housing, senior housing. Is there something that can be done for young people? Young people talk to me and says, we have enough senior housing. What about us young people? Because a lot of times, young people, maybe their lifestyle, and some of them get pregnant, some of them maybe use drugs and get put out. And then now they're homeless. Some of them do work. I know there's three young ladies who live together and is paying $2,100 for an apartment together. And a lot of times, you know, when you're young or whatever, you have kids, you don't really want to be with other people, but you're forced to because you can't.
So that's a great discussion topic. And it has to do with not so much the targeted affordable housing that receives subsidy, but it has to do with essentially trying to make sure that you have a diverse community. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a county executive in Dutchess County that used to talk about this, and he would say that there's a perverse incentive in New York State to spend a lot of money on schooling our children and send them to other states so they can use their brains, and we refuse to essentially invest small amounts of money so that we can keep them here. And if you think about what we spend in terms of both high school education and college education, that's exactly what New York State does. And so from a policy perspective, the sweet spot in economic development is a 24 to 35 year olds. And when we have a conversation with the economic development folks there, what are we doing for those kind of, I don't know whether we call them, in my ideas, they're young people, maybe some people say they're my colleagues. But that's really a problem in terms of trying to do that. And one of the reasons it's a problem is I want you to think back. You haven't had any education on what fair housing is. There's people in fair housing that are called protected class, and those are elderly, disabled, those types of things that are that become protected classes. Young people aren't a protected class unless they're elder, unless they're disabled or in some way dealing with it that way. And until we make young people a protected class or a priority class, there's not a lot that you that they're in competition with other people, and that competition has gotten harder and harder as times go by, which is why you have the a lot of younger people are coming back from college and moving in with their parents. Mm-hmm. You know, some people move out and they move back in with more people than they moved out with.
Mm-hmm.
but it's a really good question, and one of the things that we did in the Housing Action Plan, and Laura, I'm sorry, I'm taking some of your time. One of the things we did in the Housing Action Plan is we pointed out to the fact that we don't build housing for that missing middle.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing being constructed in the county are not starter homes anymore. They're really seeing being constructed the larger homes, reaching into people that are making well more than the double figure, the triple figures that were the six figures that we're seeing now, and that becomes a real problem. Zoning can take care of some of that. ADUs are one reason that you can do that. There are other things that we actually had a conversation or that's in the Housing Action Plan, and that is actually zoning for smaller housing, actually zoning for starter homes. So you start to think of how you can limit or encourage smaller housing sites and smaller housing being built that become starter homes. And there are ways to do that within a zoning statute. Very difficult discussion at a local level mm-hmm. to do that.
It is.
Yeah. So I was going to add
mm-hmm.
to Mr. Doyle's point, which is that it's not just an issue of targeted, it's the issue of just available units in
yeah.
general.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
is not a general availability of units. There are areas where you could argue that it is more conducive to young people renting. When I was going to New Paltz is a heck of a town to live in, and no matter where you are, you're generally going to have roommates, you're going to have this, you're going to have that, but like, you can be a 20-year-old in New Paltz and not have as much of a problem renting, whereas if you were in Gardner and a 20-year-old renting, you're probably going to run into neighbors being cranky. If you are in Uptown or Downtown Kingston, you might have, or Midtown, that was all three of the places, you might have less of an issue. I live in Ward 7, I'm very specific, and then if you live in my ward and you are, you know, a 20-year-old, 25-year-old renting, and you've got three people, like, I've got a couple of those folks on my street, our street doesn't give two hoots, but if you go up on Florence and you go up on, you know, that East Chester, like, you're going to have a neighborhood that's got more of an issue. But the issue here to me is available units, vacant units, and not just starter homes, but density, I think, is also where we get into the play
yeah,
where
absolutely.
It, that's where a lot of the inroads for the generic everybody catch-all, not the targeted groups you're trying to make room for, is where you can build density, is where you can really build the available vacancy that isn't targeted towards new people, young people trying to start families or whatever it is, or, you know, increasing the density and then ensuring we have a better availability of vacant units in general. It's the housing, it's the stock issue. We always come back to the stock issue, but dense units are more friendly and conducive to that population you're referring to.
So iPark 87 kind of fits that model, right? Even though it's not affordable, right?
iPark 87 would fit that model. Yes, because it would be denser housing and that kind of a concept. It's the apartment building concept. There's
yeah.
the one place in New Paltz that I'm thinking of, women, I'm sorry to point, but next to the Groovy Blueberry, there's that one tall building that everybody, I'm sure, hates in New Paltz, but like, it's the only four-story building, I think, that I've seen in New Paltz. And I'm going to show my age. It took like 20 years because it's after I graduated from college for them to build it. Like, I was in college when they first started it, and I'm like, oh, it's finally
done.
I love it. We're just going to go with that. Everyone wants to keep thinking I'm 25. We're just going to roll with it. But like places like that, it's very difficult for them to get in. But like, it's that kind of unit that is going to be more popular, able to happen simpler in Kingston.
Yeah, you're not going to get that in
you're not going to get that in Woodstock.
Yeah, no, any place like
Woodstock.
But
like, you don't have to make them like apartment building of apartment buildings. There's apartment buildings in my neighborhood. There's actually one across from Rondack Gardens you wouldn't guess is an apartment building, but it is, because it looks like a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
it only has, it has eight full-on two-bedroom apartments in it, but it looks like a very large house. And okay. It's not like the old Victorian houses, like it's a new built thing. It looks more like a, what is it, Orchard Gardens down on, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Down on Wilbur. Yeah. It looks more like those, but a smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things are the things that are more acceptable, I think, to municipalities.
The other thing I would say is that you have a tendency within within a government organization to set up committees that focus on individual things, and they have you have a discussion on housing, somebody else has a discussion on economic development, and so you have to ask yourself, where do these come together systematically? And one of the pieces that comes together when we start talking about density and housing has to do with infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is in our housing action plan is infrastructure investment. The other thing that is that you did recently is you invested ARPA funds in infrastructure countywide.
Right.
And that was a good investment. Did you get a quid pro quo, which is essentially an affordable housing provision as part of that? Maybe, maybe not. Some of the communities have it, some don't. But the point being is they have the infrastructure investment that's out there. And I want this group to start to think about, when you look at how we build more housing units and we build them in the right places, so we don't run into that conversation that you're having in Woodstock is somehow they're going to sprawl all over the mountain somewhere. You begin to start to think about that those investments can be made so that we can increase density and encourage smart growth through counties, through a county look at how to invest in infrastructure, or county assistance in terms of how to invest in infrastructure. And those things, I think, are really important. And we're a fairly unique county, if you think about it. We don't own a sewer district. We don't own a sewer plant. We don't own a water plant. You get down in, you know, the other urbanized areas, Rockland, Putnam, Dutchess County has a water authority, Orange County, they own these things.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically providing these kinds of services. And there's some cost to doing that, but they're also basically taxing districts as well. So you're providing, you're not only providing, you're providing the organizational infrastructure and some of the capital know-how in terms of how to do those kinds of things. Not something we can talk about in detail, but it's something you need to keep in your mind when a lot of times when you start to try to site housing, you run into those kinds of infrastructure issues that raise the cost, quite frankly, significantly.
And also goes along with transportation too, to make sure that there's transportation from those units to work or to whatever. Yeah.
That was the big argument surrounding the almshouse when Landmark Place was becoming Landmark Place, was whether or not the infrastructure that was currently over there would support actual residences as opposed to people in offices, which is what it was prior to when it was just a county office building.
Right.
And so making sure that REPCO and the city both made the appropriate investments in the infrastructure so that you wouldn't have, this is again where Ward 7 threw a fit, because they're right across the way, so making sure that it didn't negatively impact them. They still didn't finish with the sidewalks over there, but sidewalk infrastructure to make sure that whatever is within the area, the pedestrian infrastructure is the piece, it's not just transportation. You know, you don't want these places in the middle of nowhere, but if they are somewhat on the outskirts, you still have to have connecting infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's one of the big issues of the town of Ulster is that the sidewalk stops. Same thing with the city of Kingston, the sidewalk just stops halfway up East Chester. So it drives me nuts. My sister-in-law is right after the sidewalk stops. He's wondering why it's my pet peeve. We have to cross the street, walk along the lawn, then cross back the street again to get back on the sidewalk. And then it goes away again. So those are the pieces, though, is getting the municipalities to really, and where appropriate, the developers also to kind of put in the money. So, yeah.
Okay,
one last.
Yeah, go ahead.
I only asked a question about the young people. It doesn't have to be housing only for young people.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure everybody's included and that they don't feel like they're not being heard or forgotten. That's it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think of the advantages that I had when I was growing up versus the disadvantages that are associated with today's young people growing up, just in terms of wages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're starting to address it. I think some of the Momentum Fund work that's out there from the state, which is a mixed-use affordable housing fund, to a certain extent, begins to start to think about that you're not really looking at affordability versus workforce. There's other moderate income. The state is starting to do it, but you really, the housing game, and I don't mean that in a just derogatory sense, has become as complicated as engineering is in terms of trying to get through the morass of programs that are out there and funding sources that are out there. And if you want to look at the problems associated with that, it's, you know, when there's 15 different funding sources involved in it and trying to get a project off the ground, it becomes really difficult. And it adds to the cost of a unit substantially, because you have your attorney's fees and your financing fees become pretty hard. And one of the more recent conversations I had with a housing developer was, we have to find a way that I can find money that essentially is available to me, that I can avoid all of the review processes and time frames. And if that's the case, I may be able to build at an affordability level that's not $450,000 to $500,000 a unit for a single bedroom apartment.
Right.
And that's really what's driving some of these low income housing tax credit projects, is by the time you're done with the soft cost, developers' fees, and cost of construction, you're in the $500,000 apartment unit. And we should be able to build cheaper than that. And I think that's going to take somebody at the state, somebody at the local level, and our own housing action fund to start to say, what can we do here? And it may end up being, you can provide some relief with respect to the cost of capital, but you have to trust the developer. So rather than you actually hand them grant, you hand them a loan. And you start to think about what that looks like, and we've got a really good example of that down in.
Well, Rockland County just put $13 million towards of their ARPA funds towards a revolving loan fund. Tompkins County has one.
And then there's the...
What do you think? Oh, Westchester.
Westchester,
yeah.
In Maryland as well. Right?
Oh, Montgomery County.
Montgomery County, yeah. You know, Montgomery was $100
million? $100 million. Yeah, they're... They get a lot of press because they are kind of moving from housing action fund grants towards partnerships with developers and then fully ownership of mixed income units. So they subsidize not just through taxpayer dollars like the housing action fund we have here, but they subsidize affordable units through market rate units.
Which Montgomery County, Maryland?
Montgomery County, Maryland.
Okay. It's your budget's a billion.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big
different,
county.
Different ball game. Yeah. But the model is really interesting. It's actually moving back towards, like, what it's called, like, social housing now, where there's not this affordability period for 30 years, and then you have to worry about it going back to market rate, but it's permanently affordable units subsidized by the county, but partnerships with developers.
Yeah. We've seen that discussion start in the city of Kingston. We've seen some of our representatives at the state level start to have this conversation about social housing. We've also know that about 95% of the affordable housing in nationwide is built by the private sector. But think of this as what happens, the conversations you're seeing about the electrical generation and co-ownership and think about this in the housing field, and then think about what organizational structures you need to do that with. And you start to get a sense that there may be an opportunity here. And it's one that we shouldn't overlook. You do have a housing development corporation here. You do have a local law that says you're in the housing game. So then you start to think about what that looks like if you put them together.
Okay.
Just to add to that too, something that's coming up with the ADU program is, you know, we have our first 14 grantees. We're working through the process with them. They get $114,000, but like we've been talking about, the cost of labor and construction is going up, and so sometimes the costs and the bids that are coming in are over that $114,000. and they can't make the project pencil out because of interest rates mm-hmm. are so high. And so even if someone wanted to build a project, but the opportunity is, you know, where can the county step in to provide potentially more attractive loan products outside of the 7 or 6 or 7% that you see out there. And so that could be a make or break situation if we could step in and provide a small loan to them versus
and some of the ways that you do that is not necessarily that you're in the banking business, because that's always
right.
problematic. But you could be in the loan reserve business, and what that means is you actually backstop a loan for a bank, so they'll actually loan more money based on the asset, because you're backstopping it with a loan reserve fund. That's really sort of out of the box thinking that's going through some of the discussions we're having at the planning board, the planning department level. But it is out there. We also have, you're very fortunate, you have an economic development person that's the head of your economic development department that has a lot of banking experience. So that's a discussion that's out there as well. But I just don't want you to think that we're just focused on units, et cetera. We're looking at the opportunities that are out there that we need to think about.
A town of Woodstock is doing that with ADUs.
Yeah.
ARPA funds and ADUs, and they're working with Green County Bank to back the loans. Yeah.
That's a great way to, you know, great way to work.
So I'm wondering if as we're going to think optimistically that we're going to be working our way out of the absolute crisis point that we're in now with fair speed. We're doing the work. Can we maybe work now to create a system by which our housing action fund, however we go about that, right, through loan backstop, where we really lean into some sort of matrix by which we decide what we support. So, does it meet a certain density criteria? Otherwise, we're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Could we use that fund to really lean into the greenest possible building techniques, right? Like give some room for some innovation because people won't do it otherwise, which will actually ultimately reduce those costs. I mean, we've got the proven building models that we just don't zone for them here, right? So can we be the engine for that?
I can speak to that a little bit. So part of the Housing Action Fund, we've got, which modeled off of Tompkins County, and most of the dollars are dedicated towards actual units, but we have this thing called the Housing Catalyst Fund, which are small grants for anyone, a nonprofit, or an organization to come forward and say, we'll give you a small grant if you can prove that you've got a model that can bring down the cost of building new units for us, whether it's a panelized system, whether it's co-housing, whether, you know, there's innovation that's happening, but that's not necessarily happening here, and it's not necessarily happening with some of the projects that are coming down the pipeline because we're not asking them to. But yeah, so we have a little bit of the fund toward basically dedicated towards innovation, not just in terms of bringing down the cost, but other models of housing folks, like a home share program or something like that.
If you take anything away from these discussions, I think the point is that there are a lot of smart people out there, and there are a lot of committed people out there. If we put the smart people and the committed people together as one person and give them an opportunity, I think we'll have a lot of success. I really do think we'll have a lot of success. And the work that we're doing right now is a catalyst for that. So you need to keep an open mind to a certain extent. And I have to tell you that at my age, keeping an open mind is really difficult. Blank mind is easy, but open mind is difficult.
So I have two more things. We're going to try and close, try and end at 4. So go ahead.
I just have a quick question for Dan. Okay. Are any of those housing, supportive housing, larger for large families?
I'm so glad,
that is our biggest problem.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad
you said
that.
We have no housing.
It's for individuals.
Families.
It's not for families taking care of.
One of the things that we've talked about, and you're going to see this in terms of some of the work that's coming out in terms of what's happening to the people that are being displaced out of rental units, but you're seeing the larger families. When you go look at what social service is seeing in terms of time in motels that comes out of the HMIS system, you're seeing that those people that spend the most time in motels are larger families, sometimes in the neighborhood of almost 2 years. Yeah, so because they can't find units. Mm. So the conversation that you have with housing developers, which like to build 1 and 2 family units because they used to think that the three bedroom units were the most difficult to. Now the conversation has shifted over and say, we'd like you to consider a larger mix of family of larger family units because that's where our need is. That also goes into some of the things that we're talking about with developers that are looking at workforce housing. That the workforce housing we really need to start to think about 2 and 3 bedroom, 2 bedroom, where it was like unbelievable the amount of number of 2 bedrooms and no 3 bedrooms. The example I would give you, if you looked at the 800 and some odd units in the iPark, mm-hmm. I believe somewhere in the neighborhood of 60% of them are single bedrooms and studios. Yeah. So that to me was, we asked them as part of that discussion to say, would you consider making larger units?
Just to piggyback on your mention of zoning, I'm sorry I was late at the wrong time. Are you considering as a county looking at the zoning to change so that the empty mall space can be turned into multiple housing units? Because I had a conversation with a modular developer or developer of modular building, which keeps costs down, who actually sits on the Kingston Housing Task Force, who said we could do so much in those empty spaces. But I know
I can very quickly answer this for you, which is that each municipality handles its own zoning. You'd have
so
to make this case the town of Ulster.
It's the town of Ulster.
Every town does their own zoning. It's town of Ulster. You could talk to the county legislators that represent Ulster. It's always recommended to get them to agree in terms of wanting municipalities to move something and vice versa. Anytime we've worked with towns, like doing ARPA funds and executives, we work with the legislators to help get the contracts moving. So I would recommend speaking with the town of Ulster's board. I would recommend speaking with the town of Ulster's legislators. It's ironic because there's actually an article in the Freeman today about turning the mall into housing. Not really a full article about housing, just an FYI, but it is definitely, there is empty space, but their zoning would have to change for that area because that's all commercial.
So we've been in regular contact with the owners of the Hudson Valley Mall, encouraging uses out there that are associated with housing units. They're out of the Carolinas, if I remember correctly, it's called the Hull Group. They seem to be comfortable without going out and asking for somebody to think about development. So it's sometimes when you have a site that you look at and say, this is a great site, why isn't anybody doing anything? Is the owner literally has little or no interest or is looking at a longer term gain with respect to where their interest lies. And that may be the case here.
So that's my second question. Excuse me, maybe I think you can answer. Is there a penalty for people that hold onto properties solely just so that they can make bigger bucks down the line while people are homeless? No.
They just pay taxes, doing. Just have to pay the taxes.
You know, there's been discussions that there's been discussions, some of the more progressive planning organizations have been discussions about levying a vacant building tax in one way, shape, or form, so that you encourage reutilization of the buildings rather than holding on to them. They haven't gone very far with respect to that. There's also been a discussion about how you assess vacant property. With respect to trying to encourage
that reuse to occur. And I want you to think about this in terms of private landowner infringement, which comes to the fore when these discussions, versus public investment. Public investment in water, sewer, sidewalks, infrastructure, lighting districts, all of those things, and the building sits empty on the corner because we're waiting for a better deal. That's the impetus to start to think about how do we essentially try to make sure that you can't do something like that. That's what the public sector tries to figure out. The private sector obviously says that there's an infringement on certain kinds of rights in order to do that.
Okay, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn. I guess we have just...
Motion to adjourn.
Well, there's three of us. Yeah. Second.
Oh. Well.
All in favor? Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.